Welcome back to the Meal Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay S. Nixon from GetMealPlans.com. This is episode 17 in season 2. Siri was on with us last year and she was so fun and she gave us this wonderful perspective being born in India. And she recently went home to India and had a wonderful experience and is here today to talk to us about the foods there and sort of the magic of the cuisine of that land. And I have to say, when I first adopted a plant-based diet, you know, I really hadn't had a lot of fare outside of Italian because my family is Italian and American food. And I started getting adventurous, which is funny because when I first went, you know, in my old life, I ate like 3 things. I didn't ever try anything new, but I fell so in love with Indian food. I fell in love with it. I love to cook it. It's still my favorite cuisine. And so I'm really excited to hear all about it from Siri today. So hi, Siri.
Hi, I'm really excited to be on the podcast.
Oh, we're so excited to have you back. Everyone loved you last season. And if you haven't heard her podcast from season 1, you need to go do that right now and then come back to this one because her perspective is incredible. But so tell us about your trip.
Well, majority of my family lives back. My parents, my in-laws, my family, my childhood friends, everyone live back in India. So I try to go there every year or once in 2 years, and it was amazing, you know, going back home, meeting everyone. And the big thing that I used to miss before staying far away from India is growing up eating food there,
right?
So whenever I plan to go back and visit, it always has been about, you know, I prioritize what I would be eating when I get there. I always keep a long list. You know, I have to go back to this place. I have to go back to that restaurant, this place. I have to ask my mom to prepare this for me when I get there. So, well, it has been interesting planning my trip when I recently went back. I'm surprised that it didn't really, my attention and focus was not based around food, because I prepared and decided that, you know, food will take second seat and meeting people will take the first position when I visited. In spite of prioritizing like that, I still had a lot of fun. I ate a lot of good food. I've made a lot of sound decisions this time. It went really well overall.
I know I was reading your posts when you would come home and I was so proud of you. And I know a lot of the other members were so proud of you. And of course, we all loved all of your pictures. But one thing I really loved that you had said a few times is in the past, and you just said it now, that every time you went home, you would always think about all the foods you were going to eat. Like it was your focus. Like I have to go here and eat this. And I know I've felt that way going home to New York. And I know a lot of other people feel that way when they go on vacation. And it's like, is that really what vacation is? Is it really just about eating? It's not seeing your mom and your friends that you miss so much?
Yeah, I should tell you that I thank a lot. I give a lot of credit for being on the meal plans and getting support and doing the mindless eating coursework before I went on the trip. I specifically planned my trip in November so that I would finish reading all the 8 weeks as we planned on in the forums for the mindless eating book reading course. And that really prepared me to handle the trip that was coming up at that time. This time, like I went to India in 2014, but it was quite different when I compare it to my trip in 2015, because in 2015, I was really prepared and to have my plan of action, the how to tackle all the challenges and how to not make it all about only food. I spent a lot of time preparing myself before I even booked my flight tickets and went there. What I took seriously was really getting active and excited with meals on the meal plans. I wanted to participate extensively in forums and Facebook group that we have. And I made sure that I was doing that at least once a day. That way I kept accountable to myself.
I am
going to stick to it. And I actively participated in the mindless eating discussion groups that we have on forums. Every week you would pose a question on the chapter that we read, right?
That's right.
I actually I wanted to see what really I could get from reading each chapter and how that applied uniquely to me. And I forced myself to answer every question that you would pose and share, encourage others, get support from them.
I loved that.
And
yeah,
try to get tactics on how to handle difficult situations.
Right. And for those who are listening and maybe weren't part of Meal Mentor last year, so in the fall through Meal Mentor University, we have a fall semester where we pick a book. And last year it was Mindless Eating, which, as many of you know, is my favorite book ever. Now it sounds like it's one of Siri's favorite books too. But we read a chapter every week for about 2 months because it was, you know, 8 or 9 chapters, basically from September right until before Thanksgiving. And every week we discussed the chapter and sort of what we learned and thought about it in the forums. And it was incredibly insightful. I found it not only helpful to reread the book for maybe the 20th time, but just to see other people's reactions and interpretations. And I know, Siri, like you said, you were really involved in it. And I'm really glad to hear that taking the course and talking in the forums every week about the chapter really helped you on your trip.
It did. It really made me understand what tricks my mind can play and how I can have control over my mind to motion control, to be more prepared, to understand how my environment can be changed so I can set myself up for success.
And I know you were saying, and if you haven't already read, Siri has a guest blog post on Happy Herbivore too, which is more about her trip and actually has a lot of pictures from her trip. So if you want to see visuals, definitely check out her guest post. But one thing I remember you were saying in your guest post was that you practice in simulated conditions before you went.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. I actually practiced that for 3 weeks before I left because I wanted to observe my behavior and see if I can apply what I learned from what I gathered from your emails or support group or from the Mindless Eating book. What I did was I tried to put, first thing I did was not to batch cook all my meals. I wanted to put myself in a position where I didn't have anything, but learn to also put together something when I'm called for it. Like, I know that I would always be surrounded by potatoes or carrots or other vegetables, so I decided to, like, I would just throw those together, spice them up if I want to, or add syrup on it or add nuts on it and make a meal out of it. Or I will, like, Indianize some of the meals so I can get accustomed to some Indian tasting foods when I went back to visit India. Like, I would prepare brown rice pudding or eat more chickpeas, add some masalas so that I can blend and transition and make it easy when I actually travel to India. Other thing that I practiced is how to handle meeting people, meeting my friends when I went back to India that didn't involve a lot of food. Mm-hmm. So, like, I put some thought into what times I should suggest to meet with them. So I called, like, before I left to India, I spoke with my friends and I actually made a schedule of when I would meet them on which days. And as much as they must have hated, I tried to avoid restaurants and meeting them during lunch time. So I would always suggest that we meet after lunch. So that way, you know, I would have control about what kind of food I can eat. Maybe I can eat homemade food and then meet them somewhere else. So
yeah. And I love that. I love that you are planning, because that's what we learn with Meal Mentor, is that if we don't plan, we're planning to fail. And you really took that to heart.
Yeah, because when I went to India the year before in 2014, I wasn't planned at all. And the biggest lesson I learned with these meal plans and support groups is planning makes all the difference. Mm-hmm. And it's not just about food. It's also about setting myself up to be where I want to be. So in case, like, if my goal is to not eat a lot of outside food, I shouldn't surround myself with situations that would encourage being around food all the time. So planning to meet people after lunch or before dinner would give me that control where, you know, I can eat and then not miss out on meeting.
That's a great point, is if you want to see your friends and you don't want to make it about food, make plans not at a mealtime.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to be uncomfortable, maybe you don't want to tell your friends or you don't want them to make a big deal out of it. You can just make, like you said, a plan to do something not at a mealtime. Avoid it altogether. That's brilliant.
Yeah. I also gave some reasons that we moved and we would live somewhere far away. So it would take time for me to come and meet them. So it's I would prefer to eat and come, and they wouldn't feel bad at all. So I tried to make reasons up like that, and it wasn't really bad at all. It worked in my favor, and I was happy. I was happy at the end of the day.
I think that's the most important thing is, is a lot of people are like, and I know you've said this in the past, but I'm on vacation. I don't want to diet or think about food or plan. I just want to have a good time. But then you like don't feel good on vacation. You end up coming home from vacation being unhappy with yourself. But you went, you still enjoyed yourself. You felt even better. You had a better trip because you were so proud of yourself. And then you came home feeling even better.
Yeah, because this is, I have made a decision. This will be a lifestyle change. It's not like just because I'm on a vacation doesn't mean I will go full on crazy with only eating food. Because I have already made a decision and peace with myself. It was difficult in the beginning, but once or twice it was hard. But then it became easier. And definitely, it was in my mind that it's not about food. And once my attention was diverted from the food, it felt much richer. It felt much easier to handle the situation.
That's a really good point. Once you make, like you said, that decision, you draw that line in your sand. It's just so much easier to be consistent because the decision's been made and now you're just adhering to it. You're not arguing with yourself and debating with yourself and trying to dig deep for willpower. The decision's made.
Yeah, because I also did the sticker challenge. Last year, we had sticker challenge to make some decisions. Like you told us to make rules, right? Like I don't eat oil or I don't eat after dinner. So that word don't is making a decision already in the sentence.
Right.
So I tried to apply the similar thing to this trip while I planned. Like I don't eat outside food. Or I tried, but that's another story. But I did make rules like that, and that made it easy to plan meeting, like in social meetings and meeting friends, other family members. It became easy once I made some rules to myself.
Yeah, and I found that true too, because a lot of us did a dry January. We had kind of an informal challenge where a lot of members agreed no one was going to drink alcohol in January. And I'm not a huge drinker to begin with, but I have a cocktail from time to time. And I decided to participate as well. And, you know, I made the decision. I'm not having any alcoholic drinks in January. And I was at parties and a conference, a business conference. And so there was lots of opportunities where people were having drinks and everyone else was having drinks and people were like, you're not having anything, nothing, let me get you something. But normally I would have struggled if it would have just been like, oh, I'm avoiding alcohol because it's calories or I'm losing weight or whatever. But once I made that rule, no, for the next 31 days, I'm not having, it was so easy to say no. Like there, it was just so much easier for me. I wasn't like arguing with myself. Nope, sorry, just not this month, guys. Try again in February.
Yeah. And another thing that I did to prepare myself and set myself up for, you know, food deviations that I might have is I called up my mom and I asked her friend. She has a friend who teaches yoga professionally. I asked her friend to teach me yoga for as long as I would stay there.
Oh, wow.
So that I've done that before also, so it's not that I don't know the teacher and she doesn't know me, but the teacher always, you know, she's excited whenever I would visit India. And she's like, you know, waiting to teach me these new poses and make me experience the benefits of yoga, that she would like, she would literally want to teach me like 100 poses in the 2 weeks I would be there, but it's never possible.
Wow, she was really motivated.
But she would teach me like one or two poses that I'm scared to try. But I would successfully do them only when I follow my diet and other choices correctly. So this time I made sure that the teacher would come regularly and I would be mindful of what I would eat. Like I would eat a dinner or not have coffee while I'm there, so that my practice is more focused in a short time. So yeah, that helped me a lot too.
One thing that you mentioned, and I wanted to ask you more about this, is you had said that by using the meal plans, you knew how to build balanced meals even when you had to not eat at home. So can you tell us kind of about that?
Yeah, because with the meal plans, I observed that the meal always comprises of good balance of carbohydrates, proteins, and little fat. I used to read a lot about macros, but I don't really take them seriously now because I don't want to be obsessed. I want to progress at perfection, right? But earlier, I cannot imagine making a meal balanced, like balance it with some kind of protein, like our chickpeas or black beans, or and good amount of vegetables and little bit of rice, and make it more fulfilling and satiating. So this time, with the meal plans, I learned to make balanced meals when I'm on my own, because I'm so used to seeing making batch cooking a lot of beans, prepping vegetables, and loading up meals with a lot of side salad, and if nothing, a baked potato or oven fries or maybe even smoothies. So this time, because I wanted to be more prepared when I'm on my own in India, I would have no access to ovens or batch cooking or storing. Like, we don't really have a big refrigerator back in India. We have a smaller version. So I cannot really prepare my meals and store them. I wanted to, this time when I prepared my meals, it was not just about rice and vegetables, but I also added some chickpeas or green peas, or if I really wanted to treat myself, I added some extra nuts. Maybe sometimes for breakfast, instead of simply having Indian rice-based breakfast, I had oatmeal with fruit. It was more balanced for me that way, because I got used to that way of approaching to creating a meal on my own. Even now, if I go out, if I'm forced to eat outside of my meal plans, I automatically think, like, do I have a mixture of vegetables on my side or not? Do I have if it's a cup of brown rice, if it is white rice, I'm a little unhappy. But if there is no brown rice, I make do with white rice. I observe if there is a lot of oil or no oil. I try and make an effort to ask for no oil in the meals. I try to make sure what is the amount of avocado or guacamole I have on my plate. So working with meal plans helped me understand and get a ballpark on what a 2-ounce guacamole would look like, what a half cup of chickpeas looks like, what a 1 cup of brown rice looks like. That way I was able to apply what I learned in meal plans into creating my own meals when I'm on the go.
Yeah, and I love that. And I didn't realize that when I started with Meal Mentor, like, I was just so excited to not think about what's for dinner and to have a shopping list already made and knowing that everything was all balanced for me. But like you, I learned, okay, for me to feel satisfied and full and really good, this is kind of what it needs to look like. And like you, it also taught me portions, like, oh, that's what 2 ounces of guacamole is. That's what a cup of rice is. Oh, that's what a meal size is. Like, it really, like you, it taught me. And what I find when I travel too, a lot of times I'm in a hotel, so I don't have, you know, a full kitchen, but I can still kind of figure out, okay, I should have this much salad. I can cook this potato. I can open this can of beans. And I, like you, can figure it out. It's so freeing.
Yes, and one thing I observed while I was in India is my parents eat a lot of rice and vegetables, that is a typical lunch or dinner. I noticed that they eat way more rice and way little vegetables. According to my standard, like, it had to be different, because otherwise I felt it was not enough balanced or proportionate enough. So that helped
me
too, and I adjusted my own servings, because I noticed, you know, when she cooked potatoes, it was like half a potato for like 3 people. I didn't understand. Yeah, I can't understand why she would do, why one would cook like that. I know she's putting vegetables in every dish. I know it's all vegetarian and great. It's awesome, but still the quantity is very little. When I said half a potato, it's with a mixture of other vegetables too.
But But still, like, how do you scrimp on a potato?
Yeah. It's just, I know how less quantity is bad, but she wouldn't understand it because it fills them up anyway because it's starchy. But it's still, I felt, oh, no, you should be putting more.
We actually, I think because I knew I was talking to you and I was so excited, I actually made this samosa potatoes for dinner. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding. I made 4 potatoes for just me and my husband. I know you appreciate that.
I will, yeah. I appreciate it.
So I don't understand how she could make half a potato for 3 people, even if other vegetables are being served. I'm just like, why would you sacrifice the potato?
She was dicing 1 carrot,
half a
potato, 1 cup of beans. I just can't understand. I just didn't understand how that. I didn't want. Actually, I wanted to eat the whole thing in that case, but I had to divide it up.
That whole pan is for me, right, Mom? That's not for all of us to share.
Yeah. So I found that surprising. Maybe I have to educate them, but only when they want to. I didn't want to become judgmental. I didn't want to do anything extra while I was there. So I left that topic right there.
That was probably good. Yeah, I know I sometimes think that too when visiting family. I'm like, okay, let's just keep that in my brain. But speaking of your mom, I know your mom is an incredible cook. And as you told us in the previous podcast, you have been vegetarian all your life. You were raised vegetarian, which is actually quite common in India. But so how does your mom react to your, I mean, you're obviously still vegetarian, but now you're a little bit more, you know, with the no oil and the no dairy. Does your mom accommodate you? Like, how does she feel about it?
She did. She's incredibly supportive.
Oh, that's great.
She's the one person in my family who really gets it, who gets me when I explain. We thought a lot of effort. And she herself is very, very, she herself eats a lot of nutritious food. Well, when we go out, she always eats salad, even in India, which is very rare. Even for my wedding, she ordered a salad. She didn't even, just because she's practicing a way of life, and I don't want to be the one to oppose it. So her practice in life is supposed to be filled with a lot of vegetables and all that, like even Jain food, you know, like she doesn't have onions and garlic. But she has potatoes and carrots. Like, Jains don't even eat any root vegetables. But
Jains don't eat root vegetables.
Yeah. There is a sector in India who don't even eat root vegetables. But my mother is not that extreme. But she keeps it very simple and she's very careful about her choices. And she naturally got me when I explained that I don't eat oil anymore, or in the worst case, it has to be at the minimum if it can't be helped. So she made sure that I would, to a maximum extent, I would eat a lot of homemade meals, and she would pack them wherever I would go. Like if I went out on a trip to a tourist place, she would pack all my meals in a box and give it to me. I really appreciated that because I can't remember the last time anyone packed a lunch.
That's so cute. She packed you lunch.
Yeah, she packed my lunch. I think I became a high school student again. I really enjoy it when, you know, that's the kind of pampering I really enjoyed while I was there. Because I asked for it. When my mom is around, I don't cook. I'm like that. But it's okay. If she doesn't cook the way that I want, I go ahead and make a meal and she likes it. She would enjoy it. She enjoys everything I make. In fact, for her birthday, I baked the chocolate cake from your Like and Lean book.
Oh.
She really enjoyed it. Yeah, she enjoyed it.
Oh, good. That makes me so happy. I actually, sometimes when I make the chocolate cake, I'll put garam masala in it and I always think of you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you'll have to try it. It's so good.
Mm.
You're like, we need to get off the podcast so I can go do that now.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, it's really good. Next time you have a birthday, that's what you'll have to do. And you can just tell me how much you love me after.
Yeah. Great. And my dad also gets gets me.
Oh, that's great.
But he's really reluctant. He doesn't really enjoy brown rice. He enjoys white rice, for example. He likes to enjoy cakes and pastries occasionally, which is fine. He's very reluctant to give up dairy, and I'm just going to, like, I don't want to force him, but he has COPD, and doctor told him to cut back on dairy, but it's really hard for him to cut that back. But he tries to keep it to a minimum. So I think they're all heading in the right direction, but they're not really as serious as I am to, you know, give up and try new food items and variety, which is okay. Whatever works for them, I'm happy about that.
So I have to, of course, bring up food in India, because I know there's a lot of wonderful things there that we cannot enjoy here in the U.S. But one thing that you told me that I just found to be so amusing was that avocado is called butter fruit. And the reason I was so amused by this is because I always tell people that avocado is nature's butter.
Yeah, it is. It's butter fruit, and it's really big there. It's really huge in size. And they actually make into a smoothie there. That's how they eat it. We don't know what, I didn't know what guacamole is until I came to the United States, because we don't really make it into, we don't mash it and eat it. They just make into a smoothie and they drink it.
And they're really big, right? Like, they're way bigger than the avocados we get here.
Yes. It's like a big mango.
Wow.
Yeah. And they, it's, of course, high calories, but it's really rich in taste. It's really thick. It's very creamy. Yeah. It's a big treat.
And of course, I know you guys have a million amazing spices, but what are some other foods that visitors to India should definitely try?
Definitely. I mean, do you mean like whole food plant-based variety?
Yes, like whole food plant-based.
That would be very thrilling, because you get such affordable and cheap food at the corner of every street.
Really?
You get chickpeas.
Wait, chickpeas are sold on the street in India?
Just like that.
I live in the wrong country.
Just like that.
Potatoes are sold in Japan on the street. I can't do this.
Yeah, it's just chickpeas. It's not just regular chickpeas. It's a variety of chickpeas too, like black chickpeas and green peas. And other yellow peas, Indian yellow, garbanzo. It's not garbanzo, but it's another variety of lentil peas. What they do is they would roast them. They boil and then they roast it. Then it becomes a little bit crunchy. Then they add flange. They add potatoes, onions, tomato, and cucumber. And
that
they just
so good.
Mix everything with some garam masala kind of spices, salt and pepper, and some lemon. And it's the most full. It's the most filling and tasty street food. And it's like dirt cheap, you know. And it's sold everywhere. Any corner, you just find it everywhere. And it's really tasty. I have to highlight one thing in India. You have these juice shops on every main street. You find them. And these juice shops are not like, they're not like nectar bars where they squeeze out the fiber and just give you the juice. Or it's not like smoothies. It's simply like raw fruits and vegetables are directly whizzed with or without sugar. And these shops not just have juices, but they also carry sandwiches. And they're very popular in India. This is the Indian style sandwich where they apply all the Indian chutneys like mint, tamarind, or cilantro chutney. And
yummy.
And then they stuff it with boiled potatoes, beets, cucumber, or bell peppers, and it's really yummy and it's filling. So it's like wherever I went in India, wherever I traveled this time, I had several options like right in front of my eyes, like without oil or butter or cheese, like there. And it's really cheap. I had no problem eating outside. I decided I shouldn't eat outside before going to India, but I couldn't help, you know. When I saw them, I had to eat them because they're really tasty and it fits my needs and my taste type, and it worked fine. So this is a must thing to try if you go to India.
And I'm writing this all down because I'm like, I know I'm not supposed to make my vacation about food, but...
Yeah, but food varies greatly between North and South India. I went to South India because I'm from South India. I didn't go to North India this time. The food style is similar in both the parts, but in South India, you get more varieties of rice. Sometimes they steam, they ground rice and they steam it and make it into small circular balls that is served with some chutney again, like tomato, like a paste, tomato paste or some nut powder, like peanut powder or sesame powder. They're pretty standard in southern part of India. You find them everywhere all day. And that has no butter, no oil or anything. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Now, I know, and we've talked a lot about this. I'm not sure if we covered it in the last podcast, but and you did say it in the blog post. But, you know, other cultures, and like India especially, you eat savory for breakfast. It's kind of an American thing almost to have all these really sweet breakfasts, and you aren't usually a fan of the sweet breakfasts, and you really love savory. Mm-hmm. So maybe you could tell us some of the savory breakfasts you were eating in India.
Yeah. One of them, one of my favorites is lentil crepe. It's simply, I don't know what it is called in English, but it's called urad dal in India. You simply grind it into a paste, and you leave it alone for 6 or 8 hours, so it ferments on its own. You can mix it with rice flour also, like ground rice, and they ferment together. And you simply take a ladle and make a crepe out of it. It's my favorite food. I simply cannot live without eating that. And it's really, I bought this nonstick cookware, and it doesn't even need oil to crisp. So, and I think that's a good example of a balanced meal right there. It has both lentils and rice in it mixed. And you can eat it with potatoes. That's the most common combination in India. You eat it with like samosa stuffing that you make with meals in the meal plans. It's the same stuffing you eat the crepes with. There is steamed rice dough pancakes called idlis. It's simply ground rice that you steam in round, so in circular shapes. And you also have the regular bread. It's a flat bread called roti. It's whole wheat flour made into tortillas.
I love roti. It's so good. It's really easy to make yourself, too. There's like a bazillion videos on YouTube. It's so easy and it's so yummy.
It's easy and yummy. And like it's a staple food item like rice in India. Everyone eats roti. Usually people eat rice and curries for lunch and rotis and curries for dinner. Because it's lighter and it doesn't feel heavy in the evening. So that is a usual culture, but again, it varies. It depends on what people like most. If they are more rice-eating people, they eat more rice, but usually roti is preferred for dinner.
Interesting. I never realized that it was different like that between lunch and dinner.
Yeah, usually it is.
I guess at lunch you don't have time to make a roti for yourself, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
That reminds me, I have to hit you up we have to figure out a way to make a Whole Foods plant-based naan. That's a goal for this year. My husband loves naan.
Wow.
Yeah, you and I are going to have to collaborate on that.
Yeah. If I come across a recipe, I'll definitely share it.
Yeah, I'll have to try it a few times and send it to you for your formal evaluation. thing else that I really loved, and again, like I really can't emphasize enough seeing Siri's guest blog post. The pictures alone are worth a few seconds, but she has so many great advice. If you're thinking about planning to go to India, that you can't miss this blog post. It's so incredibly informative. One thing I loved when I was reading and looking at your pictures was all of these sort of like roti, these like crepe things, because another member of ours who actually lives in India, and he's a member of Meal Mentor, and he actually is training to climb Mount Everest, and I'm pretty sure he will be the first vegan to do it. His favorite food breakfast is to mix chickpea flour with water and then throw in whatever spices he likes and just cook it in the pan like a pancake. And we've actually had this on the meal plans a few times, and I know you always make them. Is there a name for this in Indian, like an Indian word for this that I'm missing?
Chela.
Ah, there we go. It sounds so much better than a chickpea crepe.
Yeah, that's very popular too. It's more popular in North India.
Yeah, that's where he's from, so that idea. Makes sense.
Yeah, but it's a similar, you know, it's very filling. And if one dish is popular in one part of India, it usually, you know, people are usually welcoming other state foods in India. So everyone try and make different dishes anyway. So though it is popular in northern part of India, everyone generally likes that. Chickpea flour is it's a household staple in India.
Really?
Yeah. Small children on auspicious days are given, they bathe with chickpea flour because it acts like a soap to take the oil off their body. We use chickpea flour to make all the savory items, obviously food items. Chickpea flour is used to make gravies as a thickener. It's called a kadhi. It's a very popular dish in India. Chickpeas by themselves are used to make a lot of dishes on auspicious, you know, again, auspicious festival days. Yeah, so chickpeas, you know, it's usually in some form, it's staple in everybody's house in India. Everybody has it.
And one thing I feel like, and you'll have to tell me if I'm right, I feel like almost everything is gluten-free just naturally.
Yeah. Gluten only in roti, right? Gluten is present only in
the whole wheat
flour.
Whole wheat
to make rotis, excepting that everything else is gluten-free.
Yeah, right. I just feel like I never see wheat in, or even soy really. It's always, like you said, chickpeas, rice, lentils, vegetables, and of course spices.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have to tell us about chutney, because people are always asking me about it. Like, is it like salsa? And I'm like, no. And they're like, is it like a jam? And I'm like, no. And they're like, why do I eat it? And I'm like, just eat it and enjoy it.
Yeah,
but maybe you can kind of give us the rundown on chutney and tell us some of your favorite ones.
Yeah. Chutney is not like salsa or dip. It's more like pesto, I think, because the way we make chutney is a recipe for a typical mint chutney is take mint leaf and mix it with some spices and simply grind it into a paste, and that's it, it's done. No need of seasoning or tempering with anything else. That's it, it's very simple. As for sweeter chutney, we use dates or tamarind. I don't think tamarind is common in the United States, but it's pretty common in Southern Asian countries.
Yeah, it's not too common here. I've had it, though. It's awesome, but I do think even if we get it here in America, it's not very tasty.
Yeah. Or for a sweeter chutney, we use dates. We soak dates in warm water and add some lemon juice, so it's a little bit lemony sour. And we mix it, like we whiz it in the mixer, and it's done like a paste consistency, and that's the tamarind chutney. We have coconut, we have other South Indian chutneys that are very popular, like coconut chutney, peanut chutney, sesame seed chutney. They're all really good. They go really well with the lentil crepes that I mentioned earlier. That is a standard combination that people eat with. There's other thing that's called sambar, which is simply a lentil stew with vegetables. That is a pretty common dish too. It's a pretty regularly cooked dish.
That's interesting. I haven't had a lot in the way of chutney, although I think you had me at coconut chutney. That sounded heavenly.
Yeah, it's simply coconut with green chilies ground together. That's it. And in India, they do something called as tempering. Tempering is usually they take a little bit of oil and some garbanzo beans and mustard seeds, but they can be dry roasted without oil too, or whole food plant-based version, and they mix it with the ground coconut and chili paste, and it's done.
That sounds really good too.
Yeah.
I need to go.
Where
is that? We'll have to go. We need to go.
Yes.
Need to go.
Maybe a retreat, you know, one day.
Yeah, I was just thinking. We're going to have a retreat. You'll be our tour guide.
Yeah. But for those who are looking for American-style food, you can find that in India in big cities. We have all the chains, you know, like Subway, Pizza's, and all the restaurants, different cuisines. If you go to Subway, you can obviously find a Subway salad, the kind of salad you find in United States. So lettuce and other vegetables mixed in. If you're missing American kind of food, you can definitely find it in India, but only in big cities.
That makes sense. Yeah, it's kind of like that in Europe, although Subway seems to be everywhere in Europe now. But It's funny you mentioned Domino's, because a friend of mine was in India for a little while for work, and he was so hungry for like American food that he called Domino's one night and ordered a pizza. But it was like a pizza, like circular with a dough, it was all like Indian flavored stuff on top.
Yep.
And he said it was really good, but it was surprising.
They Indianize everything. They put Indian masalas. They give that Indian touch, so it's a little bit different and appealing to their taste. It's more, I would say it's more spicier version. The sauces are spicier in India. They're not definitely oil-free. They have oil in them. But one thing I'm disappointed is they don't put a lot of vegetables. You have to ask for it. Ask for extra bell peppers, extra onions, extra mushrooms, extra corn. Everything you should ask for extra.
That's
Maybe it is Domino's policy. I don't know why they don't put enough vegetables. You should ask for more vegetables. They put like a thin strip of vegetables.
I feel like I'm always like, no, more vegetables. No, I still want more vegetables. Even lettuce. Like salad. I'll go to places and they'll be making me a salad. And I'm like, that's like four leaves of lettuce. I need so much more than that.
No, once here, I went to a restaurant in the United States, and they charged me $4 for extra lettuce. I stopped.
No.
That is just plain unfair. And
my gosh.
I just am not going to go back to that restaurant again.
Man. I mean, I've had some pretty outrageous things in terms of being charged, but that I think wins. $4 for extra lettuce.
Yes.
Ugh. My goodness.
I thought it was a joke, but it's not a joke. But I asked for explanation. They said it just charges. It's extra. That's it. It's extra, and it's just extra. I have to pay extra. So I think that's common for all vegetarians, vegans, all of us, that, you know, we are charged extra for vegetables even now. In spite of replacing meat with vegetables, they sometimes charge extra. I don't know why.
Yeah, that's happened to me. I've had the meat taken off and they charge me more. I'm like, wait, I got less food. Why is my bill higher?
Yeah, it has to stop. I think one day it will stop.
I think so. I've actually started, and I've even seen other people saying it too, that I'm starting to see restaurants where if you don't get meat, they'll let you do avocado instead, or they'll like take a dollar or something off if you don't get the meat. Or if you get the meat, it's a dollar more. And so it's nice to, you know, finally pay less.
Yeah, definitely. Most restaurants are very friendly, but one or two here and there have been challenging, but overall, I always have a fantastic experience whenever I go out to eat in the U.S. I never have problems at all.
So coming back to your homeland, one thing I've been meaning to ask you ever since the first podcast is, can you get, you know, like vegan things over there? Do you have like soy milk and stuff like that in India?
Yeah, I specifically noticed even the remotest of grocery stores had soya milk in both plain and chocolate version. I was totally
shocked. Wow, there's chocolate soy milk in India. How about that?
Yeah, I was totally shocked, because I know soya milk has been existing since last 20 years now in India. What I didn't know is it is available in remotest of grocery stores. Like, we live on the outskirts of a big city, and you can find soya milk even there. I was totally impressed with that. I thought I would see like powdered non-dairy creamer kind of varieties,
right.
But it was like right there, like when you enter the grocery store, it's right next to the dairy section. So I really enjoyed seeing that and observing that. A lot of food, not just soya milk, but a lot of non-dairy alternatives are also there. It's not it's not full grown market like in America where you get tofurkey and soya replacements for meat versions, because not many Indians who are vegetarians they never ate meat, so they don't miss anything that represents the texture of a meat, because they don't even know how that tastes like. So there is no need for products like tofurkey or meat substitution products.
That makes sense. Although I heard, and maybe this is just a rumor, that they have like veggie burgers at like McDonald's there.
Yeah, there is a particular state in India where all McDonald's are vegetarian.
That's funny. Allowed.
Yeah, there is a state called Gujarat where everyone is like vegetarian there, and McDonald's in Gujarat, all of them are like vegetarian. McDonald's is planning to open all vegetarian version of the restaurants in all the holy places in India as well. I don't know how far that project has come up to, but that's the plan. And in some fast food, McDonald's and other like KFCs and other places, they have more vegetarian options compared to meat options.
That's funny. Oh my gosh. I want to go just to see it. I probably still don't eat there, but I want to like see that.
Yeah, it's really nice. Even Subway in India, it has two separate sections, one for non-vegetarians and one for vegetarians. The lines are separate. The utensils are separate. Everything is like segregated with a lot of gap in between. Because a lot of vegetarian Indians, they take offense if equipment is shared. So that's a good thing for vegans visiting India.
Good to know. But that's I still can't believe that about the chains.
But
it makes sense because, I mean, do you know what percentage of the population is vegetarian? But although, I think you said this even about your family, even those who aren't 100% vegetarian are vegetarian most of the time, so it's got to be very common.
Well, but the non-vegetarians still outweigh vegetarians in India. I would say vegetarians will form probably 10% of the population as of today. It doesn't exist, but the big advantage vegetarians have is they find vegetarian restaurants everywhere. It's not like Western countries where you have to hunt for some vegetarian restaurants. It's fairly common in India. There are equal number of vegetarian and non-vegetarian restaurants.
Wow.
So it's not really a problem. And even in non-vegetarian restaurants, the kitchen equipment and everything is different and separated. So it's exclusively used for cooking vegetarian food and for vegetarians.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really not even though 90% of them are non-vegetarians, the importance is given equally to both vegetarians and non-vegetarians in restaurants and outside eating culture.
It's also fascinating. I'm always just so intrigued by how different, you know, other countries can be with their food. And I remember just seeing pictures. There was like something floating around the internet where it showed like a week's worth of food for a family in all these different places. And I remember being so shocked by that, but specifically being amazed by India's and sort of what people ate there.
Yeah, I think culturally, it has been an agricultural country always. So a variety of fruits and vegetables are grown in the country. They always evolved as an agricultural society. So we get a lot of variety of vegetables that taste differently also in India. Like I noticed, I actually compared, I could tell the difference when I visited last year, that tomatoes are a little bit sour, not as sweet. I don't know, I found them sweeter here. By comparison, yeah. And you get a lot more variety in India. Like you get different types of gourds, like bitter gourd, snake gourd, ridge gourd. I don't find them in the United States. Unless I go to an Indian grocery store, I can't find them. Indian style cucumber is different. It's yellow and like it looks like squash, but it's not squash. That's Indian cucumber. That's what the name is, Indian cucumber. But it's only available in Indian grocery stores.
I'm going to have to find one now because now I'm curious.
Yeah, that one is really like, again, everyone use that to make chutneys or a side dish. It's a fairly common vegetable for us. And yeah, I think just because we grow a lot of vegetables in the Indian, you know, that subcontinent area that evolved, you know, into they embrace vegetables quickly, I think, culturally. With the they think about including a variety in a week. I think that is, it could be one explanation about why they have a lot of vegetables in 1 week.
So I guess to sort of wrap up, I wanted to see if you had any favorite meal mentor recipes that were Indian cuisine inspired you might want to recommend to someone who's new to the meal plans and wants to have something close. But if nothing is your taste, I won't take offense.
No, I love all of them. I appreciate whenever you add Indianized versions. They are a must try, and I always try them out, and I love all of them. I like the samosa burritos. I love the garbanzo Indian crepes. I like the coconut chickpea curry. That has been really good. I usually repeat it whenever I don't feel like cooking some meals. I usually repeat all these meals. I like the spinach and aloo chana. I think that's what you called it. Aloo chana.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Obviously, Bombay breakfast, which
I love that too.
If you add cardamom, I'm sold.
I know. Cardamom. Yeah, if you haven't had cardamom on your oatmeal yet, do that tomorrow.
Yeah, it totally changes the whole dish, because we use a lot of cardamom. We use cardamom when we make special dishes for festivals and celebrations. It makes me feel like I'm eating some treat. You know, whenever I have a festival or an occasion to celebrate, I prepare, I theme it up. You know, I make my Bombay breakfast that day, and I theme it up and get a feel of, I feel like I'm celebrating in my own meal mentor style.
I love cardamom. I'm sitting here thinking about it. I'm like, I need to go make those 2-ingredient oatmeal cookies and put some cardamom in it.
Yeah. Wow.
I even sometimes just sprinkle it on my mango, because I realize it's just, that's how it's supposed to be in the world.
Yeah, it's used in a lot of puddings. So like brown rice pudding, I know there is a meal mentor recipe for that. Brown rice pudding for a breakfast item.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you simply add cardamom to it, it becomes like an Indian dish.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah. We call it kheer, or it becomes kheer.
You actually just reminded me of something. So when you said puddings, desserts aren't a big thing in India. Well, they are, but you don't have things like ice cream and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Ice cream is not Indian. It's not inherently Indian dish, obviously. Our kind of desserts are like puddings and fudge kind of a cake.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. But yeah, that's interesting to hear. It's like very pudding oriented in terms of traditional dessert.
Yeah, we do make puddings, but it's too like for special occasions and stuff. But we don't have it like, it's not like an everyday dessert. We don't have like after dinner dessert habit at all, first of all.
Interesting.
So when we have dessert, it's only for like birthdays or anniversaries or special occasions, festivals, cultural days, and stuff like that. So puddings is definitely one. There is this thing called grated carrot with raisins. It's called halwa. That is a very famous Indian dessert. It's simply grated carrots with brown sugar and raisins. That's it.
Oh, that sounds really good. And I love how it's always so simple.
Yeah, it is simple. They use a little bit of dairy, but I'm sure it can be substituted with almond milk or soy milk.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy. The grated carrot actually absorbs all the milk and it becomes soft and sweet.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's very simple dessert dish, quick, and it usually eaten warm or cold. I like it warm. Other desserts, I think general fruits are eaten in abundance. So we eat a lot of fruits. Mangoes are a big deal. Everyone loves mangoes in India.
I love mangoes, and I'm not in India. I love mangoes.
Yeah, we get mangoes only in the summer season and not in every season. So
okay, so noted. Like, I need to go in the summer when I need the mangoes.
Yeah, so summer means, you know, usually the memories are revolved around eating mangoes and different kinds of mangoes too, not just one kind. We have a soft version where you simply cut open the mango and simply drink it out of its own skin. You know, it's very like a slurpee. You don't even have to take it and put it in a blender. It's very juicy. Mm. We also have cut mangoes where you have to cut open like regular mangoes that you find in the United States. We have different other shapes. We have like 24 varieties of mangoes. And they are all like in summer only, not in every other season.
I want mangoes. I want to eat all the mangoes. I know. Yeah. I bet they must be so good there. Mm-hmm. Especially since they only let them grow seasonally. I think that's the problem. A lot of times in America, I'll get a mango and it's not very good and it's probably not in season and it's probably grown somewhere it's not supposed to grow. I love that about India. Everything's still very seasonal and very, yeah, you know, if it doesn't grow here, we don't have it. And so I love that.
Yeah. One big thing I noticed this time when I went to India, I just happened to walk by a bookstore. And I walked in to see what kind of books they have in all these, in the diet section. And to my shocking surprise, I found two books, two kinds of books that are related to whole food plant-based diet. One is called Zero Oil Cookbook. It's written by a bunch of doctors write those books. And they give all these Indian recipes with no oil or dairy in it. I was like, I didn't expect to see that in India.
No,
I didn't expect
that's amazing.
To see anything with zero oil. And this another book, I thought maybe someone related to you must have written. It's called The Baby Elephant Diet Book. I didn't Is it by you? Any chance?
Me, no.
No. It's called Baby Elephant Diet. Even that encourages no oil.
Well, I'll just take credit for it and pretend it's mine.
Yeah. So that has been really a big revelation for me when I saw those books that, you know, change is really happening. And it is advertised by doctors and other health professionals and encouraged. And they're all sold for like very low prices. They're not expensive at all. That was impressive.
I'm thrilled to hear that there was not one but two books promoting oil-free, but I am surprised because I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say, oh, you just can't cook Indian food without oil.
Yeah.
I'm like, but I do.
I thought like that too, but ever since I started the meal plans, I realized that you don't really need oil to make any of the Indian dishes. Most of them, you know. Yeah, deep fried food, obviously, you want to make with oil, but if you start eating no oil-based meals, you will not crave deep fried foods anyway.
That's really true, yeah.
Yeah, that and... Another thing I noticed is in regional local channels, I noticed talk shows about oil-free food and other healthy practices for such a diet. Like, now that came as a shocking to me because I didn't know that there were TV shows and people like talking to make food and benefits of no oil in their diet.
It's so much change. But, it's so amazing.
Yeah. So much happening. I didn't expect to find that in India, to be honest, because we are very slow to adopt new changes, and especially with regard to having no dairy and oil, we are very slow to adopt all that. So that was very pleasantly surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised. I'm thrilled, of course, but it just seems like if there was a place where you would expect not a whole lot of change to be happening yet. I feel like India would be, because there are so many deep, deep, deep traditions, especially with cooking. But to hear that it's changing there, that's, wow.
Yeah. A lot of Facebook groups about oil-free eating and vegan.
That's amazing.
Vegan kind of foods. They all discuss, they all promote restaurants that serve meals that are specific to whole food plant-based diet and like no oil or vegan in general. Yeah, a lot of social support is happening.
Well, there was one thing that you said that I've written down, and I actually keep it on my desk because I love it so much. But before I read that, is there anything else you'd like to add to tell everyone listening to us today, maybe about India or India food or anything?
If you travel to India, definitely buy a bottled water. That is,
buy a bottled water. I feel like this is a very important lesson.
Yeah, because you will get infected if you don't drink boiled bottled water, because you know it's a different continent and it's just different there. So you should definitely invest and buy in bottled water in India when you travel. Otherwise, you can fall sick easily.
And water is important because it is very warm there. So stay hydrated.
Not just that, it's possible to get contaminated water. Especially when you're not from there, it's easy to, and you know, if you fall sick, it just will ruin your entire trip. It will be difficult to recover.
That's true.
And bottled water is really cheap and affordable. So I definitely, that is like one solid tip I want to give to anyone who wants to travel to India.
One tip, buy bottled water.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So this was the quote that you said, and I love it. And it's really the end that I keep written out, but the whole shebang is great. And you wrote, I traveled back home to India 3 times ever since I made changes to my diet. Every time I gave in to treats, but I quickly realized my weakness is food. I have to learn to control it sooner or later. Otherwise, it just proves to me that I am not serious about my goal without a game plan, and my action will just remain the same. And it was that last part where you're saying, if I don't do this, it's just proving to me that I'm not really serious. And I just, I loved not only that honesty, but how beautifully accurate it was.
Yeah, because the sooner I agree and admit to myself, the easier it becomes, the easier my journey will become. Otherwise, I'm simply not taking it seriously. I'm not here to impress other people. I'm doing it for myself. And if I'm not staying on the course, I know the consequences for it. And the sooner I come to terms with it and being honest about my choices, the easier it will become. Right?
Exactly. That's what we're always saying. Well, Siri, it has been so fun having you on the podcast again. As I mentioned earlier, she was also a co-pilot in season 1. Her episode's awesome. Check that out. A recent guest blog post with tons of pictures from her trip to India. You guys have to see these pictures on Happy Herbivore. And of course, if you are a part of the Meal Member community, you have to know Siri because she's so sweet and so fun. And she's always posting in the forums and the group. And she's just a gem. And if you haven't joined yet and you join, you will meet her and love her as much as the rest of us do. And anytime you see Indian food on the meal plan for the week, eat it and think of Siri because that's what I always do. But she's really opened my eyes too. Yeah, you're telling me like every time you liked it, do it again. And then other people really loved it too and said, oh, I never would have tried this before and now I love it. And that just makes me so happy that we can all share in your history and your culture.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, because I can give full credit or most part of my credit, of the credit of my success, you know, of my trip to Meal Mentor, because without getting constant support, without staying on top and learning that I should be planned before making, you know, before making big trips has, you know, taught me and helped me stay on course. So definitely such a great decision to join and get support and participate and co-pilot. All of this is helping me build great relationship with food and make the best decisions.
Oh, it makes me so happy to hear it. And I know everyone, and myself included, have loved watching you kind of grow and have these realizations. And it's great because now you're almost a mentor to a lot of the new people. You've really been giving them advice. And so it's so awesome to see you figure it out. And now you get to kind of help impart that wisdom. And it's so wonderful. Yeah.
Oh, I had a great non-skills victory that I want to share.
Oh, go.
So the place where I work in my office, my location, my seating arrangement is such a way that I sit directly opposite and close to the meals that are getting that get catered in the office. We get catered meals in our office workplace, but I don't eat any of them. I bring my own lunch from home. But sometimes they order food which has some vegetarian options, and I get tempted, and I generally walk by to get my cutlery and everything. But I made a small change that made a lot of difference to stay and stick to my meal plans. Is I started bringing my own spoon and knife and fork.
But
I don't even have to go and walk past that area. You will not believe I'm not nibbling. I'm not taking any bites or extras or skipping on my meal.
That's awesome. Wow, that is such good insight.
I know this is, it's a small thing, but for in my case, it's huge because it's going to change a lot of things. I'm not going to mindlessly slack or give in to the smells that are coming in anymore. So I have been having successful 2 weeks. I started doing this 2 weeks ago. And ever since I started bringing my own knife and spoon and fork, it's just gotten, made things much easier.
So that's
sometimes
really
don't be, to the listeners, I would like to say that don't be shy to do what it takes to stick to your needs and to your plan, because you never know what works for you. And unless you try, you don't know whether it is difficult or hard or can bring you closer to what you want to do. I tried this and it worked for me, and I can't believe it. Such a small thing can make things and...
I love that, though, and that's what it sometimes is. Sometimes it is the small thing that makes this monumental impact, like bringing your own silverware. Yeah. I can't believe I never thought of this when I worked in an office. It would have made a difference for me, too.
Yeah.
I know. I actually, because I've been trying to eat slower, because I tend to eat really fast, I've been eating with my left hand and I'm a right hand, and it's a small thing, but it's made a huge difference for me, too. It's always those little things that you realize. But like you said, you have to try new things. You have to think of yourself and not be shy, because what's the worst thing that can happen? You end up in the same place. But hey, maybe this is that small change that ends up having a massive result, like your silverware.
Yeah, unless we try, we wouldn't know. So there's no harm trying.
No harm. Well, thank you so much again for coming on, Siri. I'm sure I'll have you back in season 3 because I love hanging out with you, and I know everyone loves your insights. And obviously, now you're imparting all this crazy, amazing wisdom. If you want to learn more, visit getmealplans.com. I'm your host, Lindsay S. Nixon. Siri was on the podcast for me, and I look forward to hearing with you and talking with you and seeing everybody again soon. Say hi to Siri in the forums and in the chat rooms and everything, because she's there and she's fun. And don't forget to check her blog post. Have a good night, everyone.